The Girl of the Golden West by David Belasco. Chapter 13. There was no mistaking then. No need to contrast her feeling of anxiety of a few moments ago, lest some other woman had preceded her in his affections, with her indifference on former occasions when her admirers had proved faithless. To make the girl realize that she was experiencing love, and was dominated by a passion for this man. So that, with no reason whatever in her mind to question the sincerity of Johnson's love for her, it would seem as if nothing were wanting to make the girl perfectly happy, that there could be no room in her heart for any feeling other than that of elation. And yet, curiously enough, the girl could not doze off to sleep. Some mysterious force, a vague foreboding of something about to happen, impelled her to open her eyes again and again. It was an odd and wholly new sensation, this conjuring up of distressing specters, for no girl was given less to that sort of thing. All the same, it was with difficulty that she checked an impulse to cry out to her lover, whom she believed to be asleep, and make him dissipate, by renewed assurances, the mysterious barrier which she felt was hemming her in. As for Johnson, the moment that his head had touched the pillows, he fell to thinking of the awkward situation in which he was placed, the many complications in which his heart had involved him. And finally, he found himself wondering whether the woman whom he loved so dearly was also lying sleepless in her rug on the floor. And so it was not surprising that he should spring up the moment that he heard cries from outside. "Who's that knockin', I wonder?" Although her voice showed no signs of distress or annoyance, the question coming from her in a calm tone, the girl was upon her feet almost before she knew it. In a trice she removed all evidences that she had been lying upon the floor, flinging the pillows and silk coverlet to the wardrobe top. In that same moment Johnson was standing in the parting of the curtains, his hand raised warningly. In another moment he was over to the door, where, after taking his pistols from his overcoat pockets, he stood in a cool, determined attitude, fingering his weapons. "But someone's been callin'," the girl was saying, at the very moment when above the loud roaring of the wind another knock was heard on the cabin door. "Who can it be?" she asked, as if to herself, and calmly went over to the table, where she took up the candle and lit it. Springing to her side, Johnson whispered tensely, "Don't answer! You can't let anyone in! They wouldn't understand!" The girl eyed him quizzically. "Understand what?" And before he had time to explain, much less to check her, she was standing at the window, candle in hand, peering out into the night. "Why, it's the posse!" she cried, wheeling round suddenly. "How did they ever risk it in this storm?" At these words a crushed expression appeared on Johnson's countenance. An uncanny sense of insecurity seized him. Once more the loud, insistent pounding was repeated, and as before, the outlaw, his hands on his guns, commanded her not to answer. "But what on earth do the boys want?" inquired the girl, seemingly oblivious to what he was saying. Indeed, so much so that as the voice of Nick rose high above the other sounds of the night, calling, "Min, Minnie girl, let us in!" she hurriedly brushed past him and yelled through the door, "What do you want?" Again, Johnson's hand went up imperatively. "Don't let him come in," he whispered. But even then, she heard not his warning, but silently, tremulously, listened to Sonora, who shouted through the door,
"Say, girl, you all right?"
And not until her answering voice had called back her assurance that she was safe, did she turn to the man at her side and whisper, in a voice that showed plainly her agitation and fear, "Jack Rance is there. If he was to see you here, He's that jealous, I'd be afraid." She checked her words and quickly put her ear close to the door, the voices outside having become louder and more distinct. Presently, she spun round on her heel and announced excitedly, "Ashby's there, too!" And again, she put her ear to the door.
"Ashby!"
The exclamation fell from Johnson's lips before he was aware of it. It was impossible to deceive himself any longer. The posse had tracked him.
"We want to come in, girl!"
suddenly rang out from the well-known voice of Nick.
"But you can't come in!"
shouted back the girl above the noise of the storm. Then, taking advantage of a particularly loud howl of the blast, she turned to Johnson and inquired,
"What will I say? What reason will I give?"
Serious as was Johnson's predicament, he could not suppress a smile. In a surprisingly calm voice, he told her to say that she had gone to bed. The girl's eyes flooded with admiration.
"Why, of course, that's it," she said,
and turned back to the door and called through it,
"I've gone to bed, Nick. I'm in bed now."
The barkeeper's answer was lost in another loud howl of the storm. Soon afterwards, however, the girl made out that Nick was endeavoring to convey to her a warning of some kind.
"You say you've come to warn me?"
she cried.
"Yes, Ramirez." "What? Say that again." "Ramirez is on the trail."
"Ramirez is on the trail?" repeated the girl in tones of alarm. And not waiting to hear further, she motioned to Johnson to conceal himself behind the curtains of the bed, muttering the while,
"I gotta let him in. I can't keep him out there on such a night."
He had barely reached his place of concealment when the girl slid back the bolts and bade the boys to come in. Headed by Rance, the men quickly filed in and deposited their lanterns on the floor. It was evident that they had found the storm most severe, for their boots were soaked through, and their heavy buffalo overcoats, caps, and earmuffs were covered with snow, which all, save Rance, proceeded to remove by shaking their shoulders and stamping their feet. The latter, however, calmly took off his gloves, pulled out a beautifully creased handkerchief from his pocket, and began slowly to flick off the snow from his elegant mink overcoat before hanging it carefully upon a peg on the wall. After that, he went over to the table and warmed his hands over the lighted candle there. Meanwhile, Sonora, his nose as well as his hands, which with difficulty he removed from his heavy fur mittens, showing red and swollen from the effects of the biting cold, had gone over to the fire, where he ejaculated,
"Oof, I'm cold. Glad you're safe, girl." "Yes, girl, the polka's had a narrow squeak," observed Nick, stamping his feet, which, as well as his legs, were wrapped with pieces of blanket for added warmth. Unconsciously at his words, the girl's eyes traveled to the bed. Then, drawing her robe snugly about her and seating herself, she asked with suppressed excitement,
"Why, Nick, what's the matter? What's—"
Rance took it upon himself to do the answering. Sauntering over to the girl, he drawled out,
"It takes you a long time to get up, seems to me. You haven't so much on, either," he went on, piercing her with his eyes.
Smilingly, and not in the least disconcerted by the sheriff's remark, the girl picked up a rug from the floor and wound it about her knees.
"Well?" she interrogated.
"Well, we were sure that you was in trouble," put in Sonora. "My breath just stopped."
"Me? Me in trouble, Sonora?" A little laugh that was half gay, half derisive, accompanied her words.
"See here, that man Ramirez," followed up Rance with a grim look. "Feller you was dancing with," interposed Sonora,
but checked himself instantly, lest he wound the girl's feelings. Whereupon Rance, with no such compunctions, became the spokesman, a grimace of pleasure spreading over his countenance as he thought of the unpleasant surprise he was about to impart. Stretching out his stiffened fingers over the blaze, he said in his most brutal tones, "Your pokying friend is none other than Ramirez." The girl's eyes opened wide, but they did not look at the sheriff. They looked straight before her. "I warned you, girl," spoke up Ashby, "that you should bank with us oftener." The girl gave no sign of having heard him. Her slender figure seemed to have shrunken perceptibly as she stared stupidly, uncomprehendingly, into space. "We say that Johnson was," repeated Rance impatiently. "What?" fell from the girl's lips, her face pale and set. "Are you deaf?" demanded Rance. And then, emphasizing every word, he rasped out, "The fellow you've been pokying with is the man that has been asking people to hold up their hands." "Oh, go on! You can't hand me out that!" Nevertheless, the girl looked wildly about the room. Angrily, Rance strode over to her and sneered bitingly, "You don't believe it yet, eh?" "No, I don't believe it yet," rapped out the girl, laying great stress upon the last word. "I know he isn't." "Well, he is Ramirez, and he did come to the Polka to rob it," retorted the sheriff. All at once, the note of resentment in the girl's voice became positive. She flared back at him, though she flushed in spite of herself. "But he didn't rob it!"
"That's what gets me," fretted Sonora. "He didn't."
"I should think it would get you," snapped back the girl, both in her look and voice, rebuking him for his words. It was left to Ashby to spring another surprise. "We've got his horse," he said pointedly.
"And I never knowed one of these men to separate from his horse," commented Sonora, still smarting under the girl's reprimand. "Right you are. And now that we've got his horse and this storm is on, we've got him," said Rance triumphantly. "But the last scene of Johnson," he went on with a hasty movement toward the girl and eyeing her critically, "he was headed this way. You seen anything of him?" The girl struggled hard to appear composed.
"Headin' this way?" she inquired, reddening.
"So Nick said,"
declared Sonora, looking toward that individual for proof of his words. But Nick had caught the girl's lightning glance, imposing silence upon him. In some embarrassment, he stammered out,
"That is, he was. Sid said he saw him take the trail, too."
"But the trail ends here," pointed out Rance, at the same time looking hard at the girl. "And if she hasn't seen him, where was he going?"
At this juncture, Nick espied a cigar butt on the floor. Unseen by the others, he hurriedly picked it up and threw it in the fire.
"One of our dollar Havanas! Good Lord, he's here!" he muttered to himself.
"Rance is right. Where was he going?"
was the question with which he was confronted by Sonora, when about to return to the others.
"Well, I thought I seen him," evaded Nick with considerable uneasiness. "I couldn't swear to it. You see, it was dark, and Moses, but the Sydney duck's a liar."
At length, Ashby decided that the man had in all probability been snowed under, ending confidently with,
"Something scared him off, and he lit out without his horse."
Which remark brought temporary relief to the girl, for Nick, watching her, saw the color return to her face. Unconsciously, during this discussion, the girl had risen to her feet, only to fall back in her chair again almost as suddenly, a sign of nervousness which did not escape the sharp eye of the sheriff.
"How do you know the man's a road agent?"
A shade almost of contempt was in the girl's question. Sonora breathed on his badly nipped fingers before answering,
"Well, two greasers just now were pretty positive before they quit."
Instantly, the girl's head went up in the air. "Greasers!" she ejaculated scornfully, while her eyes unfalteringly met Rance's steady gaze.
"But the woman knew him," was the sheriff's vindictive thrust.
The girl started. Her face went white.
The woman, do you say?"
"Why, yes, it was a woman that first told him that Ramirez was in the camp to rob the polka,"
Sonora informed her, though his tone showed plainly his surprise at being compelled to repeat a thing which he wrongly believed she already knew.
"We saw her at the palmetto," leered Rance.
"And we missed the reward," frowned Ashby, at which Rance quickly turned upon the speaker with,
"But Ramirez is trapped."
There was a moment's startled pause, in which the girl struggled with her passions. At last she ventured,
"Who's this woman?"
The sheriff laughed discordantly.
"Why, the woman of the back trail," he sneered.
"Nina Mitchell Terania? Then she does know him. It's true. It goes through me,"
unwittingly burst from the girl's lips. The sheriff evidently found the situation amusing, for he laughed outright.
"Ha ha! He's the sort of man who pokes with you first and then cuts your throat," was his next stab.
The girl turned upon him with eyes flashing and retorted, "Well, it's my throat, ain't it?"
"Well, I'll be..."
The sheriff's sentence was left unfinished, for Nick, quickly pulling him to one side, whispered,
"Say, Rance, the girl's cut up because she vouched for him. Don't rub it in."
Notwithstanding, Rance, to the girl's query of,
"How did this Nina Mitchell Terania know it?"
took a keen delight in telling her,
"She's his girl."
"His girl?"
repeated the girl mechanically.
"Yes, she gave us his picture," went on Rance, and taking the photograph out of his pocket, he added maliciously, "with love written on the back of it."
A glance at the photograph, which she fairly snatched out of his hands, convinced the girl of the truthfulness of his assertion. With a movement of pain, she threw it upon the floor, crying out bitterly,
"Nina Mitchell Terania! Nina Mitchell Terania!"
Turning to Ashby with an abrupt change of manner, she said contritely,
"I'm sorry, Mr. Ashby. I vouched for him."
The Wells Fargo agent softened at the note in the girl's voice. He was about to utter some comforting words to her when suddenly she spoke again.
"I suppose they had one of them little lovers' quarrels, and that made her tell you, eh?"
She laughed a forced little laugh, though her heart was speeding strangely as she kept on.
"He's the kind of man who sort of pokes with every girl he meets."
And at this she began to laugh almost hysterically. Rance, who resented her apologizing to anyone but himself, stood scowling at her.
"What are you laughing at?" he questioned.
"Oh, nothing, Jack, nothing,"
half cried, half laughed the girl.
"Only it's kind of funny how things come out, ain't it? Took in Nina Mitchell Terania. Nice company he keeps. One of them Kachuka girls with eyelashes at half mast."
Once more she broke out into a fit of laughter.
"Well, well," she resumed, "and she sold him out for money. Jack Rance, you're a better guesser than I am."
And with these words, she sank down at the table in an apathy of misery. Horror and hatred and hopelessness had possession of her. A fierce look was in her eyes when a moment later she raised her head and abruptly dismissed the boys, saying,
"Well, boys, it's getting late. Good night."
Sonora was the first to make a movement towards the door.
"Come on, boys,"
he growled in his deep bass voice. "Don't you intend to let a lady go to bed?" One by one, the men filed through the door which Nick held open for them. But when all but himself had left, the devoted little barkeeper turned to the girl with a look full of meaning and whispered, "Do you want me to stay?" "Me? Oh, no, Nick." And with a, "Good night, all. Good night, Sonora, and thank you. Good night, Nick," the girl closed the door upon them. The last that she heard from them was the muffled ejaculation, "Oh, Lordy, we'll never get down to Cloudy tonight." Now the girl slid the bolts and stood with her back against the door, as if to take extra precautions to bar out any intrusion. And with eyes that blazed, she yelled out, "Come out of that now! Step out there, Mr. Johnson!" Slowly, the road agent parted the curtains and came forward in an attitude of dejection. End of Part 1 of Chapter 13.